This is Carl the Jackal Frampton.
Hi, this is David Healy.
Hello, this is Stephen Ferris.
Hi, I'm Bethany Ferris.
Hi, this is Joey Barton.
And Jonas Gutierrez.
Hi, this is Harry Kuehl.
And you're listening to The Score.
The Score with Michael Clark. I'm a man.
Hello and welcome along to The Score here on Lisburn's 98 FM and Bangor FM with me, Michael Clark. It's the last edition of The Score of the season and we have a packed programme for you. We're looking at the European playoff finals today. We'll be talking to Lawrence Tomas Cosgrove. We'll be hearing from Cliftonville's Dara O'Connor and looking back on those dramatic semi-finals. Plus, the Super Cup is coming to Belfast. Yes, big news. Back off Turkey, it's ours. We're talking about all of that and more right here on The Score.
The Score with Michael Clark.
Yes, welcome back once again to The Score. Another week has passed by, which means we are now at the final show of our season. But don't feel too sad. It's been an amazing run, and I think everybody, maybe even some of the team, are due a break at this stage. And coming up in a little bit on the programme, we're going to hear from a representative of each of the clubs, Larne and Cliftonville, competing on Saturday in the final of the European playoff to see who gets that final spot in the UEFA Europa Conference League first qualifying round. We already know Corrine and Glentoran will be in it, and we'll be hearing, as I say, from someone from Larne and Cliftonville very soon. But before we do that, I want to start, we normally finish with him, but we're starting with him this week, with Colin Hopkins. Colin, good to have you on the show.
Yeah, nice to be back once again, Michael, for the final time this season.
You will be glad of a rest, I'm sure.
Glad of a rest, yes, I will indeed. Well, not like a bunch of rest, because once the men's season's over now, the ladies' season's underway, so it's not much of a break, really, but anyhow, it keeps us busy.
And you'll be hoping that Lisburn Distillery will have league action in August, so I would imagine you're busy preparing for that too.
Yeah, a lot of preparations going on behind the scenes, to be honest. As you say, just hopefully for not just for the weeks, but for all the clubs, hopefully we can get back to playing some sort of football back to normal when August comes around, to be honest, because it's been a long time, you know, since we've obviously been participating in competitive football, so it's important to get back as soon as possible to keep the sport alive, so to speak, from that sort of side of it. But yeah, a lot of work involved over the next few months to get that and run.
We know how quickly things change, to say the very least, and this last year and a half or thereabouts has certainly shown us that. So having this conversation in June, clearly any thoughts are subject to change, but the way things are going at the minute, are you feeling optimistic about, you know, hitting that start date at the start of August and getting things back and going?
Yeah, I think we are, to be honest. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we're probably more optimistic now than we have been for several months, to be honest. I mean, obviously, you know, looking at the greater news picture, we can see sort of the way things are going all in the right direction. Hopefully the vaccines are all kicking in, etc. now. So we're all quite optimistic it will go ahead. But as you say, it's day by day and week by week, to be honest. And that's just hopefully there's no reverse turns, and hopefully we can get up and running again come August. I think our players are due back in next week. So that gives an indication of the early stage of preparation, which is always nice to see.
Now, the big story that came out on Thursday, and a big relief, I would imagine, for football fans in Northern Ireland, certainly for the Irish Football Association, is that the Super Cup final will go ahead in Belfast as originally planned on the 11th of August between Chelsea and Villarreal, the Champions League and Europa League winners. There had been a lot of speculation that it was going to be moved to Istanbul in Turkey, and there were even quotes appearing in certain publications from Turkey's Minister of Sport saying, yeah, it's going to be ratified, we're going to get it. And I think it's fair to say, reading between the lines, this irked quite a few people. And the Irish Football Association, one has to imagine, fought tooth and nail to make sure this wasn't taken from them. And they've got what they've wanted. They've got what they were originally promised. And that is the final in Belfast on the 11th of August. I know you're a Chelsea fan, so you know, on a personal level, you'll be delighted in doing cartwheels and fingers crossed for tickets and all that sort of good stuff. But on a wider sense, what is your reading of all of this?
you know, I'm absolutely delighted as I could stand, but, you know, I can sort of half understand the reason why they were talking about maybe moving it, because obviously the cup final itself had to be shifted at the last minute, but I'm glad it is staying in Belfast, and as you say, with a sort of a double-edged sword, being a Chelsea supporter, I'm sort of thinking to myself, well, they're only going to be playing down the road, you know, so let's try and get tickets for this one, to be honest. It'll be nice to welcome the European champions to Belfast. Have to get that in very, very quickly, Michael, because it's not too many times I get to say that on the radio, so it's nice to welcome European champions of Chelsea to, obviously, Anfield Real to Belfast, and fingers crossed those who want tickets can get them in the end.
It's a funny one, isn't it? I saw someone say the other day, you know, when Chelsea won the Champions League for the first time, they binned an experienced manager for a club legend, and that worked out this time. They did it the other way around.
Yeah, it's a strange club at the end of the day. But it seems to work for some reason. Chelsea's this attitude of no matter how well you do, if you have a bad spell, you're out the door. And that's, a lot of people don't understand that. And I have to admit, I don't understand it either. But more often than not, to be honest, it does tend to work to their favours. And I think the change during mid-season from manager from Lampard to Tuchel has been a massive difference. And I think the side certainly looks a much better side than what they did earlier on the season. But yeah, as you can appreciate, absolutely delighted last Saturday night and still coming down from the cloud in terms of that one. So I'll play the boys in blue.
It's always a special feeling getting to witness that. And depending on what club you support, you know, a lot of people will have never experienced that. And I'm aware of that as well. Some cynics are saying, could it be because the two supposed underdogs from each final won that Turkey went, well, we'll maybe change our minds here? Or is that being unfair on the IFA and the teams involved?
I don't know. It's one of those ones that's a political decision. Probably will not know much about it, to be honest. You know, I think at the end, as you said earlier on, Turkey, they're obviously quite confident they were getting it, even if a couple of days ago they were making announcements about the mood and stuff, and then it was more or less just rubber stamps. So there's obviously something's happened in between. Maybe the situation hasn't improved as much as it hoped, maybe in Turkey. Maybe they just can't afford to take that chance at this stage that they have to put it again. So I think they've made the wise decision. And so I think it's perfect that the fact that it is a British team coming to Belfast, to be honest, as well, from that sort of viewpoint, because if you had a sort of two, you know, sort of sides, maybe not as well up the packet order in terms of supporters over here, but I think being a British-based side, that'll add a lot of glamour to the town as well.
And that was something that, you know, we knew when all this tug-of-war was going on anyway, because we knew who the finalists were, and you were looking at that and thinking, well, hold on, it's either going to be Chelsea and Man City, definitely. Definitely, yeah. You've got one English club there, and then Man United or Villarreal. And, you know, the interesting thing is that it's a defining moment in the history of Villarreal. It's an amazing story for them winning the Europa League because it's their first major honour. And if you dig in, and we don't have time in this programme, to look into the history of that club from a tiny team to where they have gone in a very, very short space of time, for the sheer romance of football, nobody should or could begrudge them, I don't think, of that big moment. And for Manchester United, missing out on that, I don't think it's a defining moment for Man United, but potentially could end up being a defining moment for Solskjaer. We'll see.
Yeah, time will tell the tale in terms of that. I mean, as you say, the hopes of an all-English sort of final coming over here was possible at one stage, but that's not to be. But at the same time, yeah, it's great that the final is indeed going ahead in Belfast, and a big boost for the economy and tourism and all sorts of bits and pieces and all the side effects that all come from that. So looking forward to it.
So the date for your diary is the 11th of August, and just to flag that is a Wednesday, and I do not know at this moment in time. There'll be people saying, you're talking about it, but will there be fans, Michael? How many fans will there be, all this sort of stuff? We do not know that information as of yet. I mean, yes, to my knowledge, there will be fans. What the sort of limits are, they're waiting to see, and understandably, because the Community Shield, which happens a few days prior to that in London, they have also announced, yes, it's going ahead, the curtain-raising game is happening, and they've said fan attendance and numbers and all that sort of stuff will be communicated at a later date, because both associations want as many people in there as possible, but they can't announce that yet because they need to wait and see.
No, it's a very fluid situation. Literally, you know, as I've said before, day by day and week by week, we'll just have to play it by ear. But hopefully they can get very close to capacity, you know, come August. But we'll wait and see. And importantly, I think it's just important that ordinary supporters are able to get access to tickets, to be honest. Some of these big sort of events, it's very much corporate-based, which I think is very sad at times. But fingers crossed that the ordinary supporter can get tickets for it as well.
Okay, well, that's the big news, in case you missed it. The Super Cup final will go ahead in Belfast as originally planned, that in spite of the speculation, partly because of the Minister of Sport from Turkey, said it was going to Istanbul, but UEFA has confirmed to the Irish Football Association, who have now put out a statement saying no, it will remain in Belfast. Now I want to move on to, of course, what is a big talking point of the weekend, and it's still European football because it's the European playoff final happening 5:30 Saturday at Inver Park. Larne getting to be the hosts because they're the highest ranked league finish out of all the teams that were involved. They were able to overcome Glenavon in their game, and they will play the winners of the North Belfast Derby, which we'll be talking about in just a moment because it was controversial again on penalties. Crusaders losing out to Cliftonville. That in just a moment, but first of all, Larne Glenavon, a little bit more straightforward to dissect, Colin, so we'll talk about that first.
Yeah, fair play to Larne, they've got through, but I have to say a bit of credit has to go to Glenavon as well, to be honest. They obviously went into the game as clear underdogs, but really did battle the entire way through that game, and a 93rd minute, you know, defeat to lose to such a game, sort of goes so late in the game for any club in an ordinary match is heartbreaking, but especially in sort of a playoff situation, there's an absolute gutted lead in the field. But, oh, credit to Glenavon, as I say, they went and they gave a good shot at themselves, and very, very unfortunately, and not to make it through to the final.
Battled so hard, actually took the lead in the match as well, Danny Perkis scoring after 5 minutes, but Larne didn't give them much of a breather because by the 8th minute it was 1-1 and Davy McDade scoring, you know, an instinctive, both goals in fairness were those sort of instinctive predatory forward goals where they're just in the right place at the right time and from close range were never going to let their team down.
No, very much so. At the end of the day, the right man in the right place at the right time. I suppose it sums all that up quite well, as you say, and having the early lead, but you know, Larne didn't let face and they kept in the game, kept paddling away. McDade got the leveler and then obviously Marty Donnelly with that. At late winner at the end, which is Brooklyn Allen Hearts. But from Larne's viewpoint, they'll be absolutely delighted to actually have a chance at qualifying for Europe. And this could be a big, big weekend for Larne if we can get the result against football and this final takes place.
And what a goal from Marty Donnelly as well. The touch to take it on to his supposed weaker side and then bending it in. And, you know, we talk about goalkeepers being bystanders, but what could he be but a bystander watching that one just bend inside the post and wrap inside the netting. It was a glorious finish.
Yeah, fantastic way to win a game at the end of the day. And I'm sure the supporters who were there are absolutely delighted to see it at the back of the net, to be honest. But yeah, as you say, touch of class there, which obviously put them over the line in the end. All credit to them. We're hoping for a bit more against Cliftonville over the weekend when that game gets played.
Meanwhile, the North Belfast Derby, they'd only met a week prior. That finished in a 1-1 draw with a 94th minute equaliser from David Cushley. And, you know, meeting again, a game that had everything but goals in 2 hours. It, you know, really did have everything else. It was a blood and thunder match. There was literally, you know, bodies strewn across the pitch at various points because they went to war. And two teams that have been ravaged with injuries, and Cliftonville had three of their defenders leaving the stadium on crutches at the end of the game. Crusaders had so many vital players missing. Ross Clark, Jordan Owens, Philip Lowry, and you know, you could go on and think back to the injuries that, you know, they've had for quite a period of time, like Wilson and Hegarty, etc. So down to the bare bones, and Leckie suspended too. Both teams will have felt they had chances to win it within the 2 hours, the 90 minutes and the extra time. They couldn't get that goal and it went to penalties. And obviously I was on commentary, so I'll tell you what I thought in a moment, but what did you think watching it?
Well, you see, it was a great game of football, to be honest. You know, both sides, right, you know, gave 100% on the night. Crusaders, you know, to me, held the upper hand for certain portions of the game, and then obviously Cliftonville worked their way back into it. How there was no goals coming at the end of it, I just do not know, to be honest, because there was certainly plenty of chances all around for both sides to sort of get the result. And you know, once it goes to penalties, it really is a lottery, and in this case, it was a very strange lottery indeed, shall we say, as I'm sure you'll allude to in a moment or two. But I mean, the winning goal, or the one which didn't go in, if that makes sense, to be honest with you. I mean, I just don't know what you do in terms of that. And it's, looking back, I think everybody held their hands in the horror, to be honest. But what actually can you do? It's one of those things that's happened. And I do think a lot of credit has to go to Crusaders manager Stephen Baxter for keeping such a calm head, to be honest, at the end of the match. I mean, he was fully entitled on this occasion to completely erupt and go mad, absolutely mad. I mean, that's their entire season, you know, destroyed possibly by that one sort of mistake by the match officials on the night. But fair play to him for keeping a calm head. But it's just one of those things. How we get around it in future, and we'll I don't know, but it was certainly the way of things that doesn't recur again, especially in such an important game.
Paddy McLaughlin said to me afterwards that if it happened to his team, he would have been absolutely furious. And yeah. Underneath it all, Stephen Baxter, I have no doubt, was absolutely furious. But he was very, very gracious about it. And he said that because he saw how genuinely apologetic the officials were, he had to just say, well, look, if you're telling me you've made a mistake, I can't change that. I can't change that. So what am I going to do? I can hold it against you, or I can just say, okay, well, at least you've fronted up. And the difference maybe, you know, a fortnight prior was that they felt that they were hard done by a decision, and they, you know, they didn't like how that panned out. Whereas this time, because the official said, I'm sorry, I've made a mistake, rather than rules are rules. And I'm actually not knocking Shane Andrews, because yeah, he did apply the rules correctly. Whether you think he applied them very strictly or anything else, he did apply the rules correctly. There was other side arguments about other bits and pieces, and the IFA have dealt with that, how they've felt accordingly, you know, and I can't be bothered getting back into it, to be quite frank at this stage, because it's been done to death. But on the night, the referees held his hands up afterwards. It's not going to do anything for Crusaders, but Stephen Baxter decided that was sufficient for him.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, it's one of those ones that made me question whether or not there should be an option of, in some way, getting word to the referees or the officials to say, hold on, you need to reconsider this or something. And I'm not in favour of VAR, you know, I'm not a big fan of it at the end of the day, but this was one instance whereby it was just so obvious, if that makes sense.
Yep.
VAR sort of picks it most in sort of things where you're offside by a kneecap or by a hairline, and I mean, that's a lot of nonsense, to be honest. But I mean, in terms of this one here, it was just so obvious. I mean, is there no way somebody somewhere could have said, like, you need to look at this again, to be honest? This is vital that you actually, you know, sort of have a final look at this before you make a final call on this one. But maybe goal-line technology, maybe it's beyond the Irish League, you know, clubs maybe to have people to afford that. I just do not know, to be honest. But you just thought these simple couple of goal cams in the nets or something like that there might have provided the answer to that one. But hindsight's a wonderful thing. We just have to make sure, hopefully, it doesn't happen again, you know, in the future, especially when there's so much at stake in terms of the final outcome of the match.
Yeah, and it's difficult because, you know, we were able to see those pictures because the BBC had a camera in the right place. And yeah. I'm mindful that, you know, for sporting integrity, which we talk about but is often lost, you know, in these conversations, you can't put that technology in place at one semi-final and not have it at another if you're going to use it. So in theory, it wouldn't be an even playing field if someone reviewed the BBC footage and changed the decision on the pitch in order to the retaking of penalties, when at another game the BBC weren't doing it live, so they didn't have additional cameras, so you might not have had that same angle in theory. So, you know, these are the problems. Goal line technology has never been controversial, really, has it? There was one occasion in the Premier League where they said there, you know, what was it, 14 cameras or something, and none of them saw the ball cross the line in one match, which none of us really understood. But generally speaking, it has been a huge success. That is something potentially to look at. The assistant official come under a huge amount of scrutiny because there's lots of things in it which don't look great. We see that he's in the perfect position. The ball is, you know, far enough behind the post that it makes it obvious that, you know, there's no way part of the ball is hanging over any part of the line. And you have the black pellets pop up off the surface underneath and create like a mist behind the goal line, which, you know, you would think reinforce your thoughts further. But sadly, it's not there. And the really bizarre thing, as I was waiting for Stephen Baxter to come out, and he did come out, obviously, and we did the interview, I could hear multiple different groups of people, some of them players, some of them officials, some of them stewards, watching back the footage on their phones. And to me, that was the thing where you're going, you know, we have the ability to do this. So it's just a question as to how can it be done, because I just do not think that the finances are there at the moment to put goal line technology into every Premiership ground in Northern Ireland, which means we can't have it in the league, and we can't have it in the Cup. But do we bring it in at certain stages? Is that acceptable? Is it not acceptable? These are conversations that we should have, and we should do our best to make the decisions easier for the decision makers. And we've had a couple of very controversial moments in a couple of weeks. Let's try and make it easier again for them. And if we can give them technology to make it easier, where they can review it, or whatever. I don't know, maybe that's a way, but you can't appeal, and forgive me for the sort of harsh wording, but you can't appeal bad refereeing as such. You know, a human error, you can't really appeal that. You can appeal if he doesn't apply the laws of the game right, but Crusaders can't go, well, he didn't spot a goal, because otherwise, you know, would we go back and take a World Cup off England, or would we look at that Frank Lampard goal, the ghost goal, you know, that never was, or would Spurs actually finally get a point against Manchester United?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Unfortunately, it's the way the game's set up. There's lots of laws, and some of them are an ass, but that's where we are. And Cliftonville, I said it on commentary, I want to say it again, I'm not taking away from their achievement, because they battled so hard, they got themselves to penalties, they converted all their penalties, but I did feel really sorry for Michael Ruddy, because the information that I have is that he's leaving Crusaders. So that's his last kick for the club. Unless something drastically changes this weekend, I think he's away. So if that's his last kick for the club, now, luckily for him, if we can allow a bit of emotion in football and compassion for others, you can look at that and say, it's not your fault. You haven't done a thing wrong there. You've scored another penalty. He scored loads, actually, when he was at Arts. Scored another penalty. You can leave your head held high. You've done nothing wrong there. Whereas, had he blazed it over the crossbar, it would have been a horrific way to leave a club. But there we go. Football certainly isn't always fair. And if you're a Crusaders fan, you're feeling that.
Yeah, 100% agree with you, to be honest. It's such a tricky one, to be honest. You know, it's, you say the discussions do need to be had, you know, in terms of that. The goal line technology, I don't know the expense of it. I don't know what's involved in it. You know, is it viable to put it in? Is it not? If not, then we just have to accept that. Unfortunately, mistakes will be made from time to time, and it's part of the talking shop after the game. Unfortunately, it doesn't always do the Irish League any favours nationally, sort of in terms of coverage, etc. But, you know, it is what it is, and we just have to get on with it and do the best we can. And I think for the whole, as we both know, the referees, you know, sort of in the vast majority, there's never any future issues with referees, to be honest. You know, they do the best to the best they're built in. Yes, there's the odd controversy here or there, but overall they do a very, very good job, and we'll have to be mindful of that.
It's Sod's Law as well. I actually thought Raymond Crangle and his officials had a really, really strong game. Last kick of the game, it all goes pear-shaped, and we can all relate to that in any sort of sporting context, whether it's playing it or watching it in the clubs that we follow. The final itself, Colin, Larne against Cliftonville. They've met four times this season. Larne have won two, they've drawn one, and Cliftonville have won the other. Which way do you see this one going?
It's a tough one to call this. As you say, you know, four meetings so far have all been very tight. The one thing has been quite obvious in all the games. I think we've only had five goals in all four games, so they're not big high-scoring games. I can see this being the exact same at the weekend. I can see maybe a single goal good enough to win it. I can see a very, very tight sort of match actually taking place. Cliftonville are not in great form in terms of the league lately, but granted they played a lot better against, you know, Crusaders, but in terms of the league, so they've struggled a little bit in the last few weeks of the season there, so that's not maybe going into this game, so the top comp maybe need to go. It finished nil all at Edinburgh last time, as I say, I think the guys made all of it, but another exceptionally tight sort of match. The one sort of straw that can be drawn is that I think Larne have now conceded an 8 consecutive game, which is a bit strange. So there's obviously the defence not fully functioning, so maybe Clifton will be able to nick one and maybe get the result. But who's going to win it? I think it's going to be so tight, and I think it might just drop in Larne's favour or having the home advantage. That's not that interesting.
The pressure is more so on Larne. They're the team that finished higher in the league. They're the team that have played pretty much every game available this season, barring they got a bye in the Irish Cup. But, you know, you look at that, they went all the way to the final in it. They went all the way to the final and won the County Antrim Shield. They've gone all the way to the final of the playoff. They've played all their league games. So yeah. I'm sure they're absolutely exhausted. And so, you know, this will be another time when people look, because there are those that say, and Linfield were excellent. I've already said this. Linfield were excellent against Larne in the Irish Cup final. But there's those that would say, did Larne really give their best effort, or were they just a wee bit overawed on the occasion? And they'll, I'm sure, want to hit back against those doubters. Whilst Cliftonville will be looking and thinking, we're the underdogs here. The pressure's off us. We can go and do what we do. With the caveat of also having Joe Gormley back. So we've seen him come off the bench in the last two games. It's a nice option to have.
Yeah, we could have it. What's your better option? One of your top scorers, then you'll come off and maybe nick a goal or two here. But yeah, Cliftonville will certainly, as you say, be playing with a lot less pressure, I suspect, than Larne. I mean, obviously all the investment in Larne, obviously the it will be sort of looking some sort of return, and European football is one of those returns we'll certainly be wanting to see, and this is an ideal chance for them to do it. But obviously, you know, the home advantage, which is always good, have their own support behind them, which is obviously always good. And certainly the home support will be there in big force, but that does in itself adds a little bit of extra pressure as well to them. So it could be an interesting game.
It certainly will be. It's always great to talk to you, Colin. Thanks for all your help throughout the season, and I'll talk to you in the not too distant future. You know how these things work. We'll be back at it before we know it. Blink and we're back.
Exactly. That's how it works. Lovely to be part of this season once again, Michael.
Thank you very much. A really strange season for all of us, and doing so many shows, nearly everything away from the studio this year. But thank you, Colin Hopkins.
The Score with Michael Clark.
Well, it's time now on The Score to get our first of our two guests from either club on to preview the European playoff final. Tomás Cosgrove is on the show, of course, of Larne, but he has a great knowledge of their opponents, having spent plenty of time at Cliftonville too. It's good to have you on the show. I'm sure you're raring to go now for this.
Yeah, thank you. It's a bit of an awkward situation. My kids actually play for Cliftonville, so I was at Solitude the other night there, that they're for their training, and someone walked past and they gave me a bit about Saturday, we slagging, and my kids already turned around and started shouting, "Come on, Climbo." So, it's one of them. It's going to be a split in the house, whoever wins anyway.
Well, what a great start this is already, the interview. I'm loving that. So you're going to be the bad guy if you manage to win.
I'll be the bad guy in the house, but the good guy down in Larne, yeah. Around the local area, I'll be the bad guy, but I'll be the good guy down in Larne. So either way, this is one of the situations. If we weren't playing Climbo, I'd be cheering them on, but that's just the way it is at the minute.
That's the nature of the beast, and you're well versed in that. You did have a great time at Cliftonville as well, so I'm sure you're still fondly remembered. They'll not be giving you too much abuse. They'll all be friendly.
No, I absolutely loved it. Everyone knows I'm a Cliftonville supporter. I'm a local boy. I still talk to all the boys and stuff, and I think they've already given me abuse in the first time I went back. I went every time I touched the ball, they were booing, but then they clapped me off at the end. There's a bit of banter, so it's all good crack anyway.
Yeah, well, you're well used to it anyway, so there's water off a duck's back, as they say. It does seem, though, that you've really settled in at Larne.
Yeah, you know, I'm really enjoying football again. Towards the end of Climbo, I wasn't in the best place, but Aaron and the staff at Larne have seen they've got the best out of me again, and we're playing good stuff, and I'm in really good form at the minute, so hopefully it can continue.
And it would appear from the outside looking in that there's a really tight-knit group there too. You see a lot of, you know, even on social media, joking with each other, and it all seems very light-hearted, which I would imagine as a player makes it so much easier to be a part of.
No, there's really good characters at the club. You have people from all different backgrounds, and everyone just seems to gel together, as you said, and you have people like Marty Donnelly and stuff that they always bring everyone together. They're a good laugh in the chain room, and Aaron knows when to have a good laugh as well, and knows when they're going to get down to business also.
To be a part of that promotion winning team allows you to kind of be one of the originals, doesn't it, for anyone else that's coming in?
The boys actually joke with the other boys coming in saying we've been here from the start, you're just here for the money and all those getting the back. But that's just the way it is. We were at the start, me, Marty, they were actually here a half year before me, but yeah, it was a tight-knit group, and we were actually talking about it the other day. If you look at the team now, there isn't much of us left, like, from the promotion team.
That's just what happens, isn't it? You know, players move on, new players come in, and the goals change from looking at the championship and thinking, right, we need to win the championship first and foremost, achieving that, and now you're looking for bigger things. You're looking for European qualification, and it's a huge game, and there's probably a degree of pressure on Larne, isn't there, because people look at the quality there and they're thinking, well, they weren't able to go and push for that league title. Are they even going to make Europe?
Yeah, I would say so. We'll be disappointed that Eric was kind of went off the title challenge a bit, but a bad few months, and then you go and push on again. We're starting to come back into it, and you lose the Irish Cup final, just weren't good enough on the night, and then the Glentoran game had another massive push, and we just couldn't do it. So, that said, I think the back door in in the Europe, but I would say it'd be massive for the club. It'll be the first time ever to get it. So there's a huge buzz around the place to see them do it.
I was saying this earlier on, and I know it's been pointed out elsewhere, but the sheer volume of games. Yes, you had a bye in the Irish Cup, but apart from that, you went all the way in the County Antrim Shield, won it, went all the way in the Irish Cup, losing out in the final, and you've gone all the way in the playoffs now too. You must be due a rest.
Hi, the boys give it to me to say. Kieran Sheamus is a love child. Played every game. I was the only game I got rested, that Korean game. And some of the boys said how many games we played, and you don't even think about it when you're playing. You're just trying to do your best for the team. But it is a serious amount of games played in a short time. Like, but fair play to every club and all the players for getting it done this season and in the circumstances we've been in.
Just because you mentioned the Korean game, I was there for that, and obviously, there was a lot of academy players used in that match, which is amazing to see. But it wasn't like they were there, you know, for a bit of a pat on the back. They seem like really good footballers.
Yeah, all the academy boys are brilliant. Gary Herman's done a great job in there, recruiting boys and all. And you have people like Matty Lusty, the young lad, he actually scored in the game. He's a fantastic player. And then you have boys that are in the first team squad, but maybe not as regular as the other boys, but like Conor McKendry and stuff, I thought he was brilliant on the day. So they just need their chance, and hopefully that was a wee showing of what they can do, and Tiernan got to look at them in a proper game.
Tiernan was telling me a story about Riley that he gets a bit of stick because he didn't know all the Irish League player names, and you were preparing for a game against Crusaders. You can stop me if you remember this story. And I think they were setting up a drill, and was it Tim McCann said, right, so you're Jordan Owens, and he went, no, I'm Riley.
Yeah, it actually sounds like him, the boy from Australia. He's so innocent, but he is hard as nails. Some of the boys, he near gets in the fight and training because he's just flying into the boys. And you'd be playing, you'd be doing wee small set in the frame, he's absolutely flying into the boys, but sure, you can't take all of them.
No, definitely not. And for anyone that hasn't seen him play yet, you'll quickly spot him. He's got a mop haircut, so he stands out.
Between me and him, see who the courteous in the team is.
To be fair, I think he's beating you.
I beat him.
There was actually a brilliant picture on social media the other day, defending a corner. Marty Donnelly was pretty much, he looked like someone waiting for a bus. He was having none of the defending going on. But when he pops up with goals like he did against Glenavon, and you obviously know him a long time, then he can pretty much do what he wants.
Yes, I know when he put the pressure up, he rang me. What are you doing? And it's so funny because he wrote under, I just let the bum sit there in the fan, now wait until it drops to me. Well, and he went and scored, so can't argue.
No, you can't. And the goal he scored against Glenavon, and I know any Glenavon supporters listening to this will be heartbroken because they really, really pushed you right down to the last kick of the game. But it's just that moment of brilliance that we've all come to expect from Marty Donnelly over the years.
Yeah, that's it. Glenavon pushes really, really hard. The game could have went either way, to be honest. But and then you have just that bit of magic from Marty. It was absolutely unbelievable how he done it. I don't even know how he done it. I didn't even know if he seen the guy coming. He just flexed it through his leg, and then a right foot finish here. I would have thought that from Marty Donnelly. In the corner. So that's it. It was a great goal. And you seen the buzz when it went in. Everyone's going crazy. It was some roar from the fans. It was only like 500 there. So just shows you we got a full house there. What would it be like?
How much has that meant to you, having, you know, been able to finish the season with supporters in the grounds, having played the vast majority without any?
No, it does make a difference, because see, everyone likes to play in front of people, and even for like tackle or a piece of skill, it's just a wee cheer and like a wee bit of noise. It ups players' games, and you've seen it even in the final, and a few tackles were getting in, and the Linfield fans were getting up and cheering for their team. It is good to see. It makes the games more entertaining as well on TV, I think.
Yeah, it definitely does. And selfishly, as a commentator, it makes life so much easier.
It makes your job easier as well, to be honest.
You know, everyone gets what they want. I can be quiet a bit more, and you can just let the atmosphere tell the story. There was a Cliftonville fan, the clip I shared the clip, actually won a header. The ball got punted out into the crowd, and one of the supporters jumped up and headed the ball, which, you know, just wee silly moments like that, but it got a huge cheer. And you think, gosh, isn't it just so much better to have that sort of stuff, and to have the people in that, the noise, and just the fun.
That's it. That's Irish League at its best. Everyone just having a bit of crack in the side, and no one really takes it too serious. Like, the fans give a bit of abuse and a bit of banter to the players, and that's what it's all about. And at the end of the day, to go home happy.
And no matter what way this final was going to pan out in terms of, you know, who won their semi-finals, there was no easy match in it, and you knew that from the off. With it being Cliftonville, you know, what are your thoughts there in terms of the challenge that they bring?
No, either one, even Glenadden in the semi, very, very tough game. If you had got Crusaders, it would have been a tough game. And Clemmel's going to be another tough game. Every team this season has been really good. I think the standard in our league has been really high this year. So it's going to be a huge game. And it's just going to probably come down to a bit of magic again from someone on the day. So hopefully it's from one of our boys.
That is the thing, too, that the league, I agree with you. I think the standard has gone up. And yes, teams are going full time. But so many teams are committing to, you know, a much higher workload in terms of how many days a week they're training. There's very few teams are just Tuesday, Thursday anymore, and we're seeing the benefits of that. And even outside of the Premiership, the Championship clubs that were involved in the Irish Cup, the levels of fitness of people that hadn't been playing football in a year, you know, once upon a time they'd all been coming back overweight.
Yeah, exactly. everyone used to dread it's all body fats and stuff. Like, it's all scientific stuff now, but I'd say it's really good for the league. I can't wait to see it in about 10 years, and hopefully my boys, hopefully they be around to play and they're good enough to play. I would like to see what the standard would be like, because I feel like it's going up every year.
Have you two wee men playing, have you?
I have two younger boys, yeah, and a little girl. They all play for Climbo. So.
Oh, fantastic. Well, here, I tell you what, it's a good time to be following Cliftonville's women. They're having an amazing season.
Yeah, that's it. I'm actually got it that I can't bring her to see again, because they're doing so good at the minute. And I think, there you go, that's another thing. Women's football's cut off as well. So it's brilliant if you're a kid here in Northern Ireland to get into football at the minute. Everything seems to be going for them.
And I'll make sure I don't get you in trouble with Tiernan, because obviously Lauren's women have been picking up a couple of wins lately. I've been checking out their results too. So you have options there if she turns out to be a wee star. And you know, on a serious note, where maybe as a parent you wouldn't have had a few years ago.
Exactly. No, I wasn't ever really at girls football, and the academy people at Climbo are brilliant. Marty, he takes the girls, and we coach Rachel. They're brilliant with them, and they started off with about 7 kids. There must have been about 25 of them at training last night. So it's just good to see younger girls getting out there and trying their hand at football.
And tell me this: are they all going to be right backs?
No, none of them. They're better players than me. They're all up front. I used to be up front, and I've just been slowly getting pushed back and back. I'll probably be a net soon.
Yeah, I was going to say, when the curls go, you'll be a centre back.
Oh, no, the boys are already giving it to me. I could see you playing it, and I was like, no, boys, no way.
Well, here, tell you what, you know, when Gareth Southgate is naming 4 right backs for the Euros and all the rest of it, I know Trent hobbled off injured, but who knows anymore? Maybe right back's the vogue position, so, you know, I won't write it off.
That's it. I don't think I even play right back. I end up all around the pitch. That's probably right back's only place I don't be.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Like, is there like an invisible wire that holds you and Marty together, that you have to be beside each other regardless?
Everyone says this about that we work on it or what. No, there's literally no work on it. It's just from playing together over so long, and I just know what he's going to do and he knows what I'm going to do. So hopefully we're never in the opposite team.
Well,
be a stalemate.
It's amazing how, you know, it works, because you see each other linking up so much going forwards, but I can't imagine Marty likes going backwards, so it's a surprise that you're not cut out more, you know?
Have you not seen when he hurt his hand a couple of months ago? He tried to get back, he gave a ball away and tried to get back and slipped and hurt his hand, he was out. He went, that's the last time I'm getting back.
No, he's old school. He's too good at going forwards to be going backwards, and I'm sure he would say that himself.
That's what he says. Let the bums do the work back there. He'll do it all the time.
I love that. Tomás, thank you so much for coming on to the programme, and I wish you the best of luck in the game against Cliftonville. A chance to really test yourself, both teams there, and that should be a fantastic game on Saturday.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you, Rami, and hopefully it's a good game and everyone enjoys it. Hopefully we get the result.
The Score with Michael Clark.
Oh, always good fun talking to Tomás Cosgrove, and he's only 28, by the way. All this talk about him, you know, getting old and moving into a central position, I think he's got some years before that as a concern. Now, we've heard from Lauren. It's time to hear from Cliftonville. And I am delighted to welcome onto the Score for the first time, Dara O'Connor of Cliftonville. Dara, how are you?
I'm very good, very good. Thank you for having me on.
No problem at all. Good to be talking to you. And obviously, you have a big European playoff final now to look forward to this weekend against Larne. You've played them a good few times this season already, so you have a feel for what they're about. What are your thoughts going into the game?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'll be a tricky enough encounter. Like, obviously, when I was down south, they're probably one of the teams that you probably wouldn't have heard much about over the years, and they're obviously only kind of recently challenging the top four or five places, so they've come on leaps and bounds. And to be fair to them, any time I've played them, particularly the start of the season, I came up, they're probably the team I was most impressed with over the likes of the Glen Torrens and the Linfields. They probably impressed me the most when I first came up. That being said, we've actually done quite well against them over the season. I think we drew with them away from home, and then last minute at the start as well, we conceded. So we won't go in with much fear, but we'll go in and we'll respect them 100%. We kind of know what they're about. They're very good playing it on the deck, finding lads in the pockets, and they definitely have the damage to hurt you. So hopefully Paddy comes up with a plan now later on in training to counteract that.
And to be in a position now to, you know, have European football, what would that mean for you in your first season?
Yeah, 100%. I've experienced European football twice before, with UCD and with Cork, and listen, it's always the highlight of your season. Get it going on trips away. And that being said, the two times I've been there, I've been both ended up in Luxembourg. So if we do qualify, hoping to avoid there and see some new scenery. But no, absolutely. Like, obviously, once the title race kind of wrapped itself up for a few weeks ago for us, we were kind of obviously well out of the loop with that. It was always the goal, be it through the cup or the playoffs. And look, it's kind of been eyes on that all along, and I think the boys experienced it 2 years ago through the playoffs, so they're well experienced in this kind of neck of the woods in the end of the season. So both financially and experience wise for the club, I think it's a great opportunity, and if that can't get people motivated on Saturday, God knows what will. Like,
well, they'll be hoping that you're a good luck omen, because Cork City won in Luxembourg, didn't they? You beat Progress.
We did indeed. We beat them 2-1. Now, unfortunately, that wasn't enough to actually see it through, because we had a nightmare performance at home in Tennis Cross. I think we lost 2-0. We're down to 10 men after 10 minutes, and Jesus, it wasn't great. But we beat them away from home, and we actually beat, when I was with UCD, we were in the first division. We only qualified via the fair play rule, actually, would you believe? And we were all part-timers in university. At Doodlelands, I think it was, over there as well. So no, I've good history in terms of winning games in Europe, so if we do qualify, hopefully that omen kind of remains.
You know, normally when you join a team, you have a lot more opportunities for team bonding and nights out and all that sort of thing. Clearly in the moment in history that we're in, that hasn't been as possible, restrictions lifting and starting to in the last couple of weeks. What's it been like for you?
Yeah, it's been difficult, like, because obviously that is from early how you get to know the lads on a deeper level, if that makes any sense. Like, obviously, no matter where you are, you kind of have your initiation ceremonies, you've had a team night out or two in pre-season. I lobbed in towards the end of I didn't even get a pre-season with Cliftonville. I think I joined 2 weeks into the season. So I was just thrown into the deep end, and unfortunately, I never really got to kind of click with the lads outside of football in that sense, because nowhere has been open. I went out for a few rounds of golf, and that was the most it's been to. So we've a night out planned, all things goes well, on Saturday. So hopefully that goes ahead if we get the win. But aside from that, you just kind of have to get to know lads through training, and obviously they're all bang on, so there's no issues with that. But normally you could go for coffee after training, or you meet lads, you go for a bit of shopping, or you do something like that. That just hasn't been the case since I've come up here, unfortunately, through no fault of our own, obviously. But yeah, it has been probably frustrating from that side of things, yeah.
From a football sense, it seems like you've really, especially in the last couple of months, really found your footing with the club, and you've turned out some really impressive performances.
Yeah, it was a bit of a slow burner, to be honest. Obviously, I came up from a turbulent period at Cork, I suppose, when things weren't going well for us. We were showing up to games, we were getting battered, then you're in squads, you're not in squads, and Cliftonville kind of ticked all the boxes for me coming up, and obviously I probably wasn't as sharp as I should have been, or as fit as I should have been when I first came up. And Paddy was honest with me. He always said from day one, look, I see the quality you have, just bear with me, don't get too frustrated if you're not featuring as much as you'd like to. And to be fair to him, he kind of bedded me in nicely with a kind of few substitute appearances and probably a few too many for my liking, but you can never play as much as you want to. And eventually when he kind of gave me the start a few months ago, I've grabbed the jersey and I've had that position ever since. So I think any player will tell you a run of games is what they need to find that form. And once I started 3 or 4 games in a row, got the ball rolling and I was flying. So I haven't looked back since.
And that's the thing with Paddy. He's a straight shooter as well. He'll tell you what he thinks. And that probably for a player isn't something you can take for granted, because not every manager will tell you as brutally honest as that.
Yeah, and like it was kind of nearly catch 22 at one stage, because I was coming off the bench and I was doing really well. I was nearly getting this Omen super sub. I think I had nearly more goals and assists off the bench than I did from starting. So he'd probably seen it as a way that, Jesus, he's handy to come on after we're struggling after 60 minutes. I can bring on fresh legs. I know I'll get a goal or an assist off Dara. And it probably lingered in his mind. Now, he said it once or twice that, look, you're a great asset to have off the bench. Now, that's obviously a good thing to hear and a bad thing to hear, but there's a while when I've been, but if I come off the bench and I don't do well, I won't play regardless. And if I come off the bench and do well, he'd keep seeing me as a super sub. So I didn't know what to do for a while, but eventually he bit the bullet and threw me in. And for both of us, it's worked out well ever since.
Well, certainly your quality showed again on Tuesday. And, you know, you must have at one stage felt a little bit nervous as the game was heading to penalties, because you had a really good chance one-on-one, and I think everyone was expecting you to score. And unlike yourself, you put it straight at the keeper.
Yeah, even though we've won, it's been niggling me the last couple of days. Every time I'm going to sleep, it's in the back of my head. I'm like, geez, I better not put that in the back of the net. And I watched it back, and the only thing I can say is I was going through, and the obvious thing to do was to put it to my right-hand side where there's a load of space. And I just thought that the keeper was probably going to think the same thing. So I tried to reverse it and go to the far side. And to be fair to him, he read me like a book, and it looks like a tame effort when I watch it back. And it's sickening me, but I'm glad people won't remember it, that Dara cost us the 200 odd grand by missing that, and we won on penalties. So that's why I put my name forward, to take a penalty, to try and make amends. And thankfully I did. But yeah, look, at this end of the season, you have to be ruthless. And thankfully I got away with one. So I know if I get it again now on Saturday, I won't second guess myself and I'll put them back in net this time.
Well, that's the thing. You put your name in the hat. You know, I'll take a penalty. Let me go and do it. And you tucked it away neatly. So that was, you know, to your credit. You didn't shy away. And, you know, for maybe Irish League fans who don't watch much League of Ireland, don't know what you're about, that maybe showcases a bit of that.
Yeah, no, I started centrally, actually, myself and McCrudden up top. And doing relatively well, but we kind of got involved in a bit of a scrap with Crusaders, really, is kind of long balls, and to be fair to Billy Gilburn, whatever height he is, probably 6'2", 6'3". Myself and McCrudden are no more than 5'8". We're not exactly giants, so we were struggling to command the ball aerially. So we kind of switched to a 4-3-3, I think, and I went out wide. I got a lot more ball to feet, and I think I caused more damage at them, running at them, getting the ball to feet than I did when I was more centrally last week. So, yeah, look, I always say to the midfielders, if you can get me on the ball 9 times out of 10, I hope to do something productive. Obviously, you can't get it right all the time, but Paddy instills that confidence. If we do mess up, like, just go again. I know that's a very cliche thing to say, but you just have to kind of get on with it. And there's once or twice I lost the ball, I think in the second half, I think immediately after I missed, your head's probably down for a minute or two, and he just looked over and he just gave me the thumbs up, and that's all I needed, and got on the ball again and kept going. I think I finished fairly strong, so yeah, it turned out all right in the end, I hope.
No, it certainly did, and now you have that final to look forward to. What was it like taking a penalty? It's something, and you know, in those big pressure games where it's a derby, as you say, it ended up turning into a bit of a war, and there was a real battle on the pitch. I'm sure everybody was just completely exhausted from the match and from the season that's been. To you know, have that walk up for the penalty, what goes through your mind, or does much go through your mind as you're approaching the ball to take your kick?
Well, to be completely honest with you, I woke up that morning, and any time, I don't know if other players do it or not, but any time I know there's a potential opportunity that the game goes to penalty, so a cup game or a playoff, or any time where the game could go to penalties, the first thing I do when I wake up is I know exactly where I'm going to hit it. So even before the game even went to penalties, I knew I was going to hit it in that particular spot, and that kind of saves you the second guess. Will I go here? Will I go there? So I knew from minute one where I was going to go, and I said to myself, look, if he saves it, if he makes a good save, that's all I can do. I hit it low and hard into the corner. And that was job done. Like, I kind of eliminated that pressure, I guess. And I'm sure a lot of other players do it as well, because there's nothing worse, and I've done it before years ago when I was younger. You walk off, oh, geez, where will I go? And you change your mind, you end up scuffing it, or you don't hit it with full heart. So I'm kind of glad I went through that routine, and it worked out right, and it kind of helped, I suppose, that the Clifton fans were right behind the goal. Excuse me, because the other way around, I'm sure the Crusaders fans would be giving all sorts of jeers and gestures and whatnot. So it was definitely a helping hand having the Clifton fans behind our goal, for sure.
And you're an Arklow native, am I right in saying that?
I am indeed, yeah. You've done your research correctly there.
Well, I was just thinking you'll not miss that drive now you get a wee bit of a break after Saturday.
I know, yeah. Jesus.
What's that? Take you 2.5 hours, is it?
It's around there, but actually, since I've come up here, I've moved up here now for the last couple of months, so it's kind of saving the journey. I'm based in South Belfast.
I'd rather
be closer to training, do you know what? And we can't nearly, I know we're technically part-time, but we're as full-time as I guess. Like, we're doing gym sessions in the morning, training in the evening, you're doing your recovery sessions. So I think that this tag of, oh, we're only a part-time club, we're doing well to compete with the full-time clubs. Every single one of us, I think, by and on, are doing the extra sessions by ourselves. And I know that some of the lads have jobs, but getting up early to doing a gym session, if we're in for a recovery session. So it may seem that way, but we're putting in just as much effort as everybody else. So hopefully that will that'll stand to us against the so-called full team, the full-time sides, like your Lions and Glentorans come Saturday. So.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting component to it, actually, because I was talking to one of the other managers from the league, and that's what they were saying. You know, you can look at all the teams that are full-time already, but 6 or 7 teams are living that full-time lifestyle, even if they're not on, you know, full-time contracts, because that's what it takes now. And I know Paddy is certainly a man for making sure everybody's fit and doing their gym sessions and everything like that. So there's no way you'll be anything but in top shape.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think there's a bit of an aura about full-time. And listen, I was full-time at Cork, and certainly you are fit, but I'm just as fit, if not fitter, up here. Like, do you know what I mean? You're still this. The hours you put on the pitch are the same. It's mm-hmm. just 6 o'clock in the evening, rather at 10 a.m. in the morning. Do you know what I mean? What time of day you train doesn't necessarily matter, but obviously from a financial point of view, I suppose boys only jobs to make up the other side of things. So I get the arguments for both. Don't get me wrong, but no. When it comes to fitness, I think it's a fairly level playing field. I think Cliftonville, I think most people would agree, are probably one of the fittest teams this year. We work hard on and off the ball, and being able to last us the 120 minutes and still have the mental appetite to go and put penalties away kind of shows the reward there. So hopefully we get it done in 90 minutes, that being said, on Saturday.
Yeah, that's
220 minutes in a week might be a bit much, but he's God.
I know, that definitely wouldn't be good for the legs. And I was going to say, just on the injury front, I mean, Paddy jokingly said to me after the game on Tuesday that I think everyone's afraid of being picked in my back four because it guarantees you'll get hurt. There's so many of your players have, you know, picked up wounds, and you look at Jamie Harney and how brave he was to continue when I think he needed his head stapled at halftime, didn't he?
Yeah, we were all getting our breath at halftime. We could just hear this gun going off in the physio room. We looked in, he's getting 4 or 5 stitches to the back of the head, and not a bottle, and out he goes. So if any of us felt like we were tired or struggling or having niggles, seeing him getting a few stitches in the head kind of spurred us on. Like, geez, if he's getting that, I'm grand. I don't need to worry about the bruise on my toe or this or that. Like, so, yeah, we've been, I don't like using the word curse, but there has been a kind of a recurring theme of injuries, which sort of unsettles any back four, because ideally, whether it's 3 or 4, you'd want the same personnel the whole time. And to be honest, I don't think we've had that all year, to be honest, bar maybe once or twice in a row. So I don't envy Paddy having to make those decisions, having to chop and change the back four the whole time, but I guess that's why I'm the player and he's the manager. So,
very well put. Dara, lovely talking to you. Thanks so much for coming on to The Score.
No problem at all. Thank you very much.
The Score with Michael Clark.
Cliftonville's Player of the Month for May there, Dara O'Connor on The Score, his debut on the programme. Great to hear from him ahead of Saturday's final. And some other news for Cliftonville is that they are going to be starting work on their playing surface in the coming weeks to remove the current one, which was first installed back in 2010, and let's face it, has been subject to wear and tear since then, and people have been wondering when will it be upgraded. So the good news is they've done their rigorous research, they say. They've had a tender process, and they've now appointed a construction company to do the needful. So a new and exciting pitch that's going to be in place, and they think it'll take about 4 weeks to do, and they're going to make sure that the academy and ladies teams can continue with training and games at other venues whilst the work takes place. So nobody's going to be inconvenienced, and everyone will eventually reap the benefits from it in a month or so. So very good news for Cliftonville. We're practically at the end of the programme, the last one of the season, and I just wanted to take this opportunity to say thank you very much for sticking with us throughout the year in these very strange and uncertain times when we didn't know when the league was going to start. We were asking those questions on your behalf, on behalf of the clubs. We were getting the views of clubs that were deemed non-elite and hearing how they felt about that, and the experiences of different rules and regulations that came in, and things that changed throughout the campaign. No, you know, Boxing Day matches for the first time in my career, and the first time in, you know, a lot longer than that. So we had all these weird things happen, and we know why they happened, and a lot of people have been challenged and had to try and overcome those hurdles at various stages: fixture congestion, reorganizing fixtures, finding new venues on occasion, teams playing each other with, you know, far too tight of a turnaround, teams playing each other too frequently. Absolutely insane. And yet we're here, we've come through it. And that's the point, and that is what needs to be recognised and celebrated, I think, at an appropriate time. That, yes, one game left of the campaign, the playoff final that we've been talking about in this programme, but the fact that we got to 38 games in the league season, we're able to crown champions on the pitch, having completed a full fixture list, that the Irish Cup was able to be played to completion, even though it was reduced in size and it didn't quite have the same mystique that it normally does. It still happened. It still had a winner. And that in itself, you know, is an achievement too. It hasn't been a perfect season without supporters. Many games have felt more subdued than they would have done. Players have had to try and get used to that. And I think I can speak on behalf of the players, one of the few times I feel like I can do that, and saying that it's so much better with supporters. And everyone that we've had on this programme has said that, and we've started to hear that again. Those fans in grounds making noise. What it does for teams and performances, and people who had no energy doing their level best to, you know, draw a performance out, to see out a campaign, have been given a boost by fans being allowed back in through the turnstiles and into stands, even in the reduced numbers that we have, and a time when people feel like maybe we should have more than we have. Even that number, 500 nominally, slightly less for some teams depending on what's going on certain grounds, but that support has made a huge difference. And I can only hope that if things continue the way they are, we'll be able to push for much larger numbers, and numbers based on a percentage of the grounds, if not pushing for fuller attendances across the board, depending on where we are. So I thank you for your support. I thank you for your kind messages throughout the campaign, your recognition of the work that goes on here. Normally we sit in the studio, we've guests in, and I've had to do a lot of this remotely from my house. Very, very strange. Thankfully, people have been taking my calls and allowed this program to continue in the way that it has done. I hope that your experience of the program has not been hindered in any way, and we're grateful for all the different ways that we can keep in touch and enjoy the league this season. And I will say that this campaign, in my eyes, is a huge success. I hope we're never in a position where fans can't get access to games other than on live streams, other than having to watch from wherever you were. I hope you'll always have the opportunity to get to a game if it's possible for you. But for what everyone has had to deal with this season, they managed it. And, you know, when we think about the curtailment and everything of the previous campaign and the fallouts, the many fallouts that, to be honest, at one point made me fed up of talking about football in Northern Ireland, we're in a position now where I think a lot of people can be very proud of the work that has been done and the position that we're in now, and that other leagues, not just the Premiership, which was looked after, other leagues will have the right to come back, and it'll make everything that bit more special next year. So well done, the people that have put in those long, hard hours, done a lot of work without much thanks, and it sometimes maybe had to play the villain. But the football family gets thrown about, and quite often you look at it and you think, ain't always a family, but people forget families can fall out too. We're in a very healthy place. Our product is improving. Our talent is there to be seen. And thank goodness kids can get back out and play football now. And all of a sudden, we're in a position where, come August, it looks like things are going to be back to some kind of normal. And isn't that just a thought to hold on to and cherish as we take a summer break and enjoy ourselves? So thank you for your company. Thank you for your support, as always. And thank you for listening. I'll be back in the not too distant future, but I will savour some time off too, I have to be honest, after a long and tiring campaign. So until we speak again, enjoy your weekend of sport and your summer. Bye-bye.